Conversation piece. Conversation starter or stopper, depending on who you're talking to.
That's true. That's true.
So anyway, as I mentioned, the governor signed the legislation. I'm just going to go through a couple of quick points that the bill did, that this legislation did. It expanded the uses. It created a cannabis regulatory commission, which is the 5 full-time commission members. It also created an Office of Minority, Disabled Veterans, and Women Cannabis Development, and this is for the cannabis micro-business opportunities. The dispensing, it expands the current list of qualifying medical conditions. It revises quantity restrictions to provide that for the 18 months after the effective date, patients may receive up to 3 ounces of medical cannabis in dry form or the equivalent in another form. After that, the CRC shall make determination that authorizes the delivery. Taxation. So here's the interesting thing. There's been this conversation about tax and the taxability of cannabis. And for those that follow any of this, in California and Colorado and some of the other states, the taxes are almost 50% of what the cost of the product is, and sometimes close to 100% of the cost of the product, depending on where you're purchasing. In New Jersey right now, there's the state sales tax, which is the
6.875.
So it reduces to 4% July 1 of 2020, 2% July 1, 2021, and in 2022, there will be no tax on medical only.
No sales tax.
But this legislation allows municipalities that host a medical cannabis dispensary or clinical registrant to assess up to a 2% transfer tax. Now, this is not the tax rate that the League of Municipalities and many municipalities had advocated for.
Right.
We were looking for, because there were going to be 4 licenses within the recreational, it would have been a little bit higher on the dispensary. However, this doesn't talk about taxing on if you just have a grow facility, if you just have a manufacturer. It's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Right.
So with that, as I said, Clinton had a company that had come to us, and I think there's a lot of thoughts on both sides about a dispensary and where it belongs, where it doesn't belong. In the town of Clinton, the site that they were looking at was not zoned for pharmacy or retail use. The existing zoning of the building would not have allowed for a dispensary, which would have required them to go through zoning board, get a variance. The application process is, so it expanded. I believe there's 12 additional licenses that are being given based on the expansion of the bill.
Right.
And it was broken up 4 for each of the regions, North, Central, South.
That's right. But I also think it was broken up by type of license.
Possibly, yeah.
But I don't recall specifics about...
Yes, as far as how many would actually allow for dispensary, how many. The interesting thing is, so the original 6 licenses required a vertically integrated business. So from grow to dispensing, it all had to be in the same location.
Right.
And they had to be not-for-profit agencies.
Right. So this is, I think, where people are getting very confused, because in the initial, as you just said, 6 licenses, you have 6 facilities which are seed to sale, essentially.
Right.
Right. So they're growing, they're cultivating, they're
processing,
and then they're dispensing all in one facility. So you have these sort of, I don't want to call them big box stores, but they're essentially big box medical marijuana stores where everything happens in-house and it's all contained in one place. And then this change to the law creating new licenses changed that. And so that was, I think, a little bit of a shock to the system of people who were not prepared for that change, where you might have a medical marijuana dispensary that could be much smaller and contained in your sort of standard-looking pharmacy.
Right.
Versus something that's much bigger and more warehouse-looking. So even that alone, I think, is a major change. And I'm not advocating pro or con in either direction. I'm just saying that that is a big change to the scenario for people. And so I think that that was surprising, not necessarily to people who have been following this all along, but to your average resident who goes, wait, I thought it was all like, you know, the facility in Woodbridge or that kind of thing.
Down in Egg Harbor and all that
exactly.
stuff. You know, and I think that's probably the biggest difficulty for all of us. You know, obviously, you and I have been following it since I heard about it, you know, kind of the plan for it to expand and initially going into recreational as well. You know, I tried to make sure I did my due diligence and researched other states. The league is also helping us with, you know, trying to get information, trying to give us access to people who, you know, to towns that are experiencing it in other states. Hopefully at the league this year, we'll have some mayors from Massachusetts that'll be able to come down and talk about what's worked for them. The change in the, and it was interesting because I remember one of the residents asked us or asked the company, you know, why didn't you come to us sooner? And what I thought was interesting is the gentleman from Keystone said, you found out about, we literally found out about this a week before you did. So, you know, it's not, this isn't something any of us have been sitting on. And towns haven't, now, what, let me qualify that. Have companies reached out to municipalities before the governor signed this legislation? Absolutely. They've all been testing the waters in different locations, in different towns. Mostly in Hunterdon, it seems to be grow facilities, because obviously being a farming county.
I mean, we're an agricultural county, and that sort of makes sense for people. And I think, I also think people, look, you're going to have people who are just against it altogether for a variety of reasons, and that's their opinion and their right to be against it, and that's fine. But I think people who are on the fence may be more likely to go, well, a grow facility kind of makes sense here because we're already growing things. This is a growing community, for lack of a better description. You know, we are an agricultural community, you know, maybe not in the town of Clinton, but in our surrounding areas, we're surrounded by farms, and that's what we're used to. And so any sort of change to that is uncomfortable and hard for people, and I get that. So I kind of see how that's been people's reaction to this kind of influx. But, you know, we talk a lot about economic development and economic sustainability, and I think this is something that, you know, people are going to start to need to recognize is that the environment here is going to change over time. It's not going to stay soybeans and corn and alfalfa. It's just not. It's not.
It's kind of like Long Island. Long Island and the potato farms that now became wineries.
I mean, things will change. And I'm not suggesting that it will become, you know, high rises in the next Manhattan. That's obviously also not what's going to happen. But, you know, what I try to say to people who are concerned about this is let's be the drivers, not the receivers, right? Let's be the people driving the industry, driving the economy versus the people it's happening to. And this is an instance where we can kind of control a little bit of our experience. And so maybe we don't want any, maybe we don't, you know, want any medical marijuana in Hunterdon County. I don't know the answer to that. But to just, you know, flat refuse to have the conversations, I think, is a mistake. And, and to miss, you know, you miss the opportunity to see what the possibilities are.
And, well, I think that's what came across in the meeting, too, is the fact that we had the conversations. We allowed everyone the opportunity to speak. And, yes, there were people who, you know, were not residents of the town that are patients that shared their stories. And I think it's an education for everyone. You know, I said something to someone, I'm like, you're trying to change 60 years of behavior in 60 days. And that's almost impossible to do.
And the reality is many of us grew up in a Nancy Reagan era of just say no to drugs. In the under the DARE program. And that's that was the norm. That was what was thought was going to be a successful way to keep kids off of drugs and to keep kids safe from what really can be a dangerous substance, the reality, however, is the data, empirical, scientific fact, has shown us that those programs are unsuccessful. They don't work. And so to tell your kids, just don't do drugs, and then leave it.
Right. You need, they need to be educated beyond.
No, you can say don't do drugs, and I say it.
You know, I say it every day.
You know, I'm not suggesting that you should go to your kids and be like, yeah, do it. I'm suggesting that it's much like saying, you know, abstinence and then no education.
Right.
There has to be the education component combined with the conversation. It's an ongoing conversation, just like understanding what medical marijuana actually is right. An ongoing conversation, and it's an ongoing education in what all of this is. We didn't grow up with medical marijuana. I didn't know what it was
right.
until I Neither educated did I. Myself about it.
Right.
You know, it's not that I'm smarter than anyone else. I just have now spent, 18 months
yeah.
reading about it and learning about it and understanding that, you know, certain things have been removed from medical marijuana, so people don't get high like they do with street marijuana.
Right.
And that medical marijuana isn't cut with rat poison and car fuel and, you know, deadly toxic chemicals like
right.
street marijuana is. So it's a process of educating yourself in a way that you can make an informed decision. And in my opinion, the informed decision may be, I still don't believe in this.
Right. Oh, no, absolutely. And I think we saw that, too. I mean, there are people who are adamantly opposed. And listen, you've got this. And you remember when we had the conversation with the 7th and 8th graders?
Yes.
About, you know, medical marijuana, and they're asking all these questions. And it's interesting because federally it's still illegal.
Yep.
It's still a controlled – it's on the controlled substance list.
It's a class one federally banned substance.
So, you know, you have a state that is now allowing it. And obviously we're not the first state.
Not even close.
And someone asked the question, you know, how do you manage, you know, what do your police do when you have a situation where someone has marijuana and you know it's illegal, but New Jersey it's not? And, you know, listen, these are not easy questions to answer in any way, shape, or form. And I think we're all going to continue learning, and there's going to yeah. be growing pains with it.
Absolutely. I mean, that one's a little easy because our police are state. They're not FBI agents, so
no.
they follow
no.
state law.
But the
issues around the federal laws, you know, the reality is, and no one wants to hear this, and no one's going to like me saying this, the reality is federally it will be legalized at some point in the next 10 to 20 years.
Yes, I believe you're right.
It will be, because the war on drugs is unsustainable. It's costing this country millions, if not billions of dollars,
mm-hmm.
and it's primarily funded by pharmaceutical companies. So everyone can, you know,
right.
Listen, like that I've said that, but that's data-driven, that's not about politics, that's about data and facts and science. So, you know, at some point it will become federally legalized, and those issues will... Or at least it will come off of the class one.
Yes, probably. Yeah. No, I don't disagree. I mean, I see it probably happening, to your point, probably in the next 10 to 20 years.
Yeah.
As more and more states start going this way, it's going to be a struggle to have that constant conflict.
Yeah. Well, and it's also unsustainable given that alcohol is legal and cigarettes are legal. And other things that kill people are legal.
Yes.
And, you know, we're
continuing. Right. It's you've got this, all these other substances that people are using and abusing, you know,
absolutely.
And really it just comes down to just, and we do have to go to commercial real quick, but it's, you know, abuse of anything
yeah.
is no good.
Absolutely.
That's really, you know, and that's what I try to manage with my kids is,
yes.
It's not – it obviously don't do drugs, but they're also exposed to so much more than I ever was.
Oh, it's terrifying.
And they know so much more than I ever did.
And they have so much more access.
They do. You know, what we've learned about how they communicate with one another, or mm-hmm. how they communicate with what they want to get, the codes. I Google codes all the time, and I'm like – it just – I'm amazed.
Yeah.
But we'll continue this conversation.
Definitely.
But first we're going to go to commercial break, so – here we go.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Okay, we are back to continue the conversation. So one of the other things, so obviously we had, you know, a visit from a dispensary out of Pennsylvania. Franklin Township also had, and they issued a letter of support for a grow facility over at the old post office in Franklin Township. That's on Whitebridge Road. I should probably be careful how I say that, huh? Putting too much information out there. But public information, and I know that there are, you know, residents who feel kind of, who are opposed to it. I understand. But they did. Now, that does not guarantee a license.
Right.
But part of the licensing requirement is a letter of support from the community. I believe Reddington has also been approached for the old Walmart. And the one thing to keep in mind, too, the grow facilities are indoor.
Right.
We're not putting it out in the field.
For anyone to run through
and grab. It is a highly regulated, closed facility. And I'm assuming they're going to continue the same way they do it now, which is cameras in, you know, 50 different places that look at every single plant. And each part of the plant gets an RFID tag. So the plant and then the bud gets a tag. And then when the bud is produced into something, gets a tag. And then the final product.
So they can identify basically seed to sale, they can identify each piece as it moves through the process.
Right.
Basically with a barcode.
Yes.
To scan it. And it's essentially a retention process so that nothing gets lost or stolen throughout the process.
Right.
It's a way of maintaining also quality control. So if you wind up finding that you have a bad plant or somebody has a bad reaction to a plant or there's a strain,
you can trace it back.
Issue. You know, we did have somebody come and talk to us at one of our meetings. I can't think, not at council. And, you know, he was talking about the type of people who are working in his facility. And it was scientists from Rutgers and from the farm industry and
right.
people who specialize in, I can't think of the right word, but farming science. Agricultural science, and
yes.
The word has gone from me for some reason. But, you know, these are people with PhDs in this, you know, in the field who have gone into this industry and are kind of now spearheading the effort to quality control and maintain standards and make sure that the end product that's being produced is safe and effective and is treating people who, you know, and I think this is what I would like to bring it back to and what I always try to talk to people about when we're talking about medical marijuana, which is what we are talking about today, and I think that's important to note, the people who are getting medical marijuana are typically dying, you know, or they have some sort of very serious issue going on. And so we're not talking about, you know, what we all grew up watching, like the Cheech and Chong movies.
You know, like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Exactly. This is not, right, you know, whatever that MTV movie was when I was a kid. I can't think of it. But this is people who have MS.
Yes.
This is people who suffer severe PTSD. You know,
debilitating diseases that are they're trying not to treat with opioids to make their they're trying to keep their lives so they can continue to function.
Exactly. Be productive members of society, right? And so it's I think we all have and I had it. I'll acknowledge that. I had this image in my mind of a medical marijuana dispensary and it was
a pot shop.
You know, it's a head shop.
Yeah.
And it's billowing smoke and it's got bongs and it's got like it's got those skulls and tie-dye and,
right,
you know, nonsense. And
that's not what you're seeing.
It's a very sterile pharmacy-like environment. And so I think if we can work towards changing our mindset and thinking about this about in terms of who are we helping,
right,
and who are we harming, if we don't do this, and if we do it, who are we harming? And I'm not sure who's being harmed by a medical marijuana dispensary. I know maybe locations should be discussed, and maybe exteriors need to be discussed, naming of locations needs to be discussed, those kinds of things, security for sure, all kinds of, there's all ways in which one can manage these sorts of scenarios. But asking somebody who's already suffering and, you know, dying of end-stage cancer to drive 3 hours to get the one thing that's going to allow them to eat a meal,
yeah,
it's sad to me, and I think we can do better.
Yeah, that's the struggle, right? You know, it's you don't want to deny someone what they need, especially if it helps. And we should also point out this is not necessarily just smoking marijuana because there's multiple forms. It can be an oil, it can be a lozenge, it can be a pill. In some cases, you know, a cream or a lotion.
I think it's often vaping as well, which I see people walking down the street vaping all the time, much to my surprise.
Yes.
I don't know why it surprises me every time, but it does. And, you know, I think I want to dispel that myth that it's somehow like, you know, that image of a college dorm room billowing smoke. It's just not that.
The other thing, too, is anyone that works in any of the facilities goes through a strict background check.
Yes.
And they have to be licensed. It's not a matter of I can just come in off the street.
Right.
And even as a bud tender. I mean, and there is training that's involved.
Right.
They are high-paying positions for some people. You know, I think that didn't he tell us like a starting is $19 an hour?
I don't remember what he said. I can't imagine it's much less. I mean,
right?
Because you're not getting high school kids in there.
No, not at all.
You're getting people who have some sort of training.
Yes.
Who are willing to submit themselves to an extensive background check,
And rigorous training,
exactly,
and scrutiny.
And to be on camera all the time.
Yes.
A camera that's live streamed to the state.
Yes.
Department of Health and Safety, I believe, although maybe now under
Department the new commission.
New the commission. I don't know where it's streaming to now. So, you know, I think all of those things kind of weed out a lot of folks.
Yes, it really does. I mean, and I'll go back to what I saw when I was in Colorado and in California. It is a strict environment. Colorado is probably closer to what New Jersey is going to have. California, you just need to show ID in order to go into the store. They have integrated both medical and recreational. So if you have medical need, you show them your medical card, you get what you need. If you're there for recreational, you just pick out what you want to purchase as long as you don't exceed your amount that you can purchase. You show your ID, you get into their system. and you make your purchase. Colorado, you walk into the first store, and there's a security guard there. You give them your ID. They register you in their system, their data system. Then you go, you get buzzed into another door if it, and they bifurcate. So they bifurcate recreational from mm-hmm. medical. So if you've got medical, you go to this store, recreational, go to this store, get buzzed into that. Usually you're waiting in a line because they only allow so many people to a counter at a time.
Right.
You wait in line, you go up to, you know, whatever you're going to purchase, and then you make your purchase. They show your ID again. They scan your ID again. They give it to you in a sealed bag. And it is, it's a locked, sealed bag. You can't, you know, mess around with it. And that's how you can actually leave the building with it. And then you show as you're walking out that, you know, you've got a receipt or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think New Jersey is looking to do the same. Obviously, we're only medical, but it is a first stop ID, right. Second stop buzzed into a door, and right. then into the facility for the, that's actually the dispensary.
Right. So, I'm going to make the obvious point in comparison. I had sinus surgery and then immediately got a sinus infection, which was really, really painful. It was awful. And my doctor prescribed me oxycodone, which I don't take.
Right.
Because you get addicted to it within 3 days. I went to the doctor. I went to the pharmacy to pick it up. I stood in line. I didn't show them my ID. I told them my name. I didn't give them my pharmacy card. Mm-hmm. They gave me my oxycodone. They gave me 30 days of pills.
Wow.
I walked out the door with it. I could have opened it in the line and taken as many as I wanted.
Right.
I could have driven my car.
After taking.
I could have given them to the next person in line. Nobody would have done anything to me.
That's, you know, and I think that's the sad part, that separating out the marijuana aspect of it, we need to address the opioid issue that we have here in the States,
in
New Jersey. You know, I personally can't take any. Anytime I've ever tried, I'm deathly ill.
I vomit.
I do too. So I'm like, I'm good. Just give me some Tylenol, regular Tylenol, and it works.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's, we don't want to talk about that elephant in the room.
Well, that's where I get so frustrated with what I feel is the outrage over medical marijuana and the silence over the opioid epidemic.
But keep in mind, I think a lot of the, you know, and no excuses or anything like that, but the marijuana is still the image.
Absolutely.
Of Cheech and Chong.
Absolutely. Which is why every time we have these conversations and every time I talk to people in town and people in Hunterdon County, you know, and I don't want to sound preachy and judgy, because I grew up with the same message.
Right.
I grew up with the same message. You hurt yourself, you go to the doctor. The doctor gives you a prescription. It's safe. Your doctor gave it to you.
Right.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. Drugs are bad.
Yes.
Right? Like, those are all the messages we all received. And they're not necessarily wrong.
Right.
I agree. I'm not suggesting that one should go out and smoke a bunch of weed. You shouldn't. It's not good for you. But we have to, as a community, have a very honest conversation about what medical marijuana actually is.
Yes.
Who is actually using it.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens in a medical marijuana dispensary, instead of perpetuating these myths of the Cheech and Chong, of the head shop, of, you know, those people coming into this neighborhood and doing these things in my neighborhood and crime rates go up. No, they don't. That's not proven. Long-term studies have shown that's actually false. That's not true.
It is. It's the unknown. I mean, it's what we've talked about all along. It's the fear of the unknown. And I will personally tell you, you know, while I believe in medical marijuana and I understand recreational is coming, not knowing what the recreational is going to look like, that's what scares me.
Mm-hmm.
From its ability to, there's this assumption that towns have complete control over what can and cannot come into your community.
Yeah.
That's a false, absolutely. It is, we have some control with our zoning.
Right.
But a zone can also be, you know, you can go to your zoning board and request a variance. And if a case is presented, you cannot deny the variance.
Right. Or you can wind up in litigation, or we can be challenged for a variety of different
affordable housing is a perfect example.
Exactly. No, I 100% agree. And the lack of clarity from the state is extraordinarily problematic for
yes.
us. And I think the fact that we're not getting guidance in the form of clear rules, of a clear direction, of what it is that the legislature wants to do, of what they think is, in the hearts and minds of the people of the
right.
state, and that we're not seeing, them come together meaningfully to discuss and move forward is detrimental to all of us, and especially smaller communities where we're kind of in limbo waiting.
Right. Well, that's it. I mean, initially we, under the old litigation, listen to me, under the old legislation that was proposed, yeah, towns had the opportunity to opt in or opt out.
Right.
Which is fine. That gives every community control over whether or not you want to see.
Yep.
And you could do it by license.
Yep.
So under the recreational, there were going to be four licenses. Under this new medical, there's still only one license. It's just you either get a license to grow and manufacture, you get a license to dispense. That's part of the concern. So, can you opt out? I don't get a sense from and it's not written clearly, and I could be wrong. So
yeah.
If anyone out there has read the legislation, it doesn't look like you can opt out of the medical. You can, based on zoning,
right.
if you're already zoned. Now, there are a lot of requirements. So you have to have on-site parking. You have to be in a place that you're still outside the 1,000 feet of a school, park, daycare, house of worship. Trying to go through the whole list of things.
Right.
All of those things you still have, which, it's a good part of the town of Clinton.
Right.
So it's all of those things are still there, but the control as far as if a building is zoned, it meets all of the requirements. Unless you specifically zone out any dispensary.
Right.
And we couldn't have done that until after the governor signed the legislation.
Right, because it just would have been null and void.
Right. So, and then you get the whole, all right, well, if we do it now, do we get hit with spot zoning litigation? All of these questions that we're constantly struggling with, and
yep.
we are not getting direction from the state in any way, shape, or form. I hear what the governor's office has to say. I hear what the Senate president's office has to say and the speaker's office. But we need to have a say at that table. Goes
absolutely.
Back to that whole, I want a seat at the table.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And because, we are smaller communities here, we're functioning on razor-thin budgets.
Right.
We're functioning in, basically as glorified volunteers.
Yes.
trying the best we can to do the best for our communities and make sure that, we hear from our residents what they want.
Right.
What it is that their goals are for their community. We live there. It's our community, too.
Right.
We're trying to represent everybody's interests and do the best that we can while also navigating the legality of it all. Because we
yes.
can't just be exclusionary. That's not legal.
Right.
Right? So, not everyone understands that. And even if they do understand that, it feels icky. And so people don't want to hear it or they don't like it. And,
yes.
it becomes a complicated conversation of, well, I don't want it here in my yard. So no,
right.
and don't do it.
But that's not even just unique to the medical marijuana, because we see this
no,
with housing developments,
course.
Right? I don't want it. And I'm not saying that that's a bad feeling to have.
No.
We all feel that way, that you don't want something right in your backyard.
Absolutely. Just wait until somebody redevelops the AMP property and it's in my backyard and
right.
I have to listen to it all day long. I'm not going to be thrilled about it. I mean, I'm going to be thrilled that somebody's redeveloping it if that happens, but I'm not
yes.
going to be thrilled about listening to it and construction happening,
Right. All those things.
I'm human. I get that. Nobody likes that stuff.
Right. And I get, here's the beauty of what we have, right? We've got this quaint, locked in time piece of history.
Right.
But we need to make sure we keep that. because we don't want to lose what we have.
We don't.
How do we create economic opportunities that are that complement what we already have?
So I don't like the word quaint, and I've tried to move us away from it because quaint to me feels old, right? We're historic.
Yes.
But we're modern.
Yes.
And so
quaint modern.
We have the historic Red Mill, but the historic Red Mill also has an amazing STEAM program where kids are learning all about science and math and all kinds
yes.
of incredible programs that are going to prepare them for future engineering and math and science degrees, right? So,
right.
yeah, it's historic, but all of that
it's
stuff
a quaint
is,
picture.
Is modern and technology forward.
Yes.
And so when I think about our town and our community, I think about it in that way. And that's the picture I want people to see of Clinton is...
Yes.
Yes, we're historic, and it's a beautiful... there is no town more beautiful in Hunterdon County. Sorry, Hunterdon County. There's no town more beautiful.
I don't think
beautiful
more beautiful in Clinton either, in New Jersey
in,
either.
In Hunterdon County than our town. But we are also moving forward,
right.
And we are modern, and we are ready for change in a positive direction, in a
yes.
improved infrastructure, which we're planning for.
Oh,
and in,
yes.
You know, in upgraded systems, in... you know, our school is modern, and Dr. Cohen does an amazing job of making sure that it stays.
And we're going to talk to him. He and the board president will be here one Monday too.
Perfect. And so, you know, all of these things I think are where our focus is, not on the fact that, you know, I don't want to forget our history, but we have to make sure our focus is forward.
Yes, but it's all about complementing what we have, right? And that's if you notice, we don't have chains, huge chains, businesses that come into
no. yeah.
because we've got, you know, opportunities for small business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is the lifeblood of most downtowns are small businesses.
Yep.
And we want to make sure we give those opportunities. At the same time, encourage new businesses to come that can offer livable wages or opportunities. Or, you know, even for our residents, we have a number of residents that own businesses in town, and,
yes.
and we're happy to have them being able to keep everything close by. We do have to go to a quick break because we missed our news break.
Oops.
So we're going to do our commercials, and then we will come back and continue the conversation.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Get into it.
Everybody right there.
Get involved.
Everybody, you.
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, we are back for our final few minutes before we have to leave, and I think this conversation can probably go on for months, if not years.
I mean, clearly I can talk about this for days.
Yes.
I have.
We've been talking about it for months.
That's
so
true.
You know,
I have opinions.
We do. We all do. Here's my request, and this goes to the legislature and to the governor, is that the commission gets appointed sooner rather than later.
Yep.
They have 18 months to promulgate the rules and listen to what towns and elected officials have to say about what those rules should look like and what rights we need to have as elected officials. I mean, you know, we did the public hearing because I believe it's important, you know, and as do you and the rest of the council, that it's we need to hear from the residents. And I know that a lot of times, you know, it's hard for people to get out. And we try not to ask you to come out too frequently. But on issues like this, where we know it's going to have a significant impact, we need your feedback. We can't do this in a vacuum. I don't want to do this in a vacuum.
No.
It doesn't benefit anyone that way. You know, and we can agree to disagree on the whether it's right or wrong. Ultimately, I think, speaking for myself and probably for the council, is we're going to do what the residents want.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's important. You know, personal feelings aside on anything, it's the overall community that has to have a say. Because, again, it's going to drive. And I don't want to be trying to change 60 years of behavior in 60 days. Not at all.
No. I think just, you know, to your point, I think, you know, we all, sometimes people forget that we're elected officials, but we're also people.
Yes.
And so we have our own opinions about things and our own preferences and our own moral compass and our own backgrounds, and we bring to the table our own lives. But, you know, speaking certainly for myself, and I think for you, we come with the understanding that we have a job to do, and our job is to listen to our residents' concerns.
Yes.
And the more we hear from our residents, the better, in my opinion. Preferably not screaming at us, but
but okay, everyone, once in a while,
happens,
it's fine.
It happens. But, you know, to the extent that in Clinton, if you're a resident in Clinton and you hear us on this and you have concerns or questions or ideas, you know, please bring them to us. Please tell us what your thoughts are. We want to hear them, whether they're pro or con or something entirely separate. They're things we want to hear.
Right. Or if you want more information, let us know. More than happy. I mean, one of the things we've talked about, and we do want to try and make this happen, you know, I think this one was a good opportunity, but quarterly, at least, we want to do town hall meetings where we bring in speakers to talk about, you know, issues that are being, that you'll be impacted by, whether through legislation or rules, you know, something else that's going to have a significant impact on us, and the town has weighed in on it, is the C1 designations for the Beaver Brook and the South Branch of the Raritan. Now, what does that mean? It means that it can make it harder for properties to be developed, including private properties,
right,
because you have buffers and new requirements that you're going to have to meet. Now, we have not seen the rules that DEP is going to put out there yet. I think they closed the comments June 3rd. I think they have 45 days to respond to the comments.
Probably.
And then, you know, we're going to see potentially some impact to our town. What does it look like? I don't know. I'm hoping that I can get some time with DEP over the next couple of weeks to address it and understand, you know, what does it mean for our sewer plant? What does it mean for our redevelopment areas? Because both of our redevelopment areas are on the Beaver Brook.
Right.
And that can be significant.
Right.
You know, it's where you're balancing the environmental, and this is by no means saying that C1 designations are bad, but we need to look at where we do C1 designations and does it make sense to do it in a already developed community.
Right.
So I think that's going to be a second conversation. I'll get on that soapbox soon.
The point being, we want to hear from you. We want to have as much transparency and openness with our residents as possible. And even if you're not a resident of Clinton and you have questions, you know, we're here, we're available. Reach out to us, ask us anything.
Right. And if it's something we can't handle, we'll definitely get you to the right place.
Exactly.
I think plenty of times I've taken calls from non-residents and I get them in touch with their mayors.
Right.
Just because your mailing address is Clinton doesn't necessarily mean that you live in the town.
Yes, you've learned that many times.
Yes, I have. But we really are here to answer questions and to help. Not everyone believes it, and I can't change how someone feels or thinks, but know that, you know, even if we disagree, if you've got a comment or a thought, share it, and we're willing to hear it out and have a discussion around it.
Yep.
So with that, we are going to go into our news, and then it will be on to the next show, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Thanks, everyone.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial Advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Some Democratic lawmakers, including the top Senate Democrat, who viewed conditions at some detention centers at the southern border over the weekend, they've come back saying that they saw horrific conditions. And President Trump and other Republicans say they're glad the Democrats have finally seen the light. Senator Martha McSally, an Arizona Republican, saying,
glad the Democrats and Chuck Schumer finally see there is a crisis at the border. They need to come to the table now and work with us to solve it.
President Trump's actually praising the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer after he visits the border, saying on a tweet that he'd like to set up a meeting with Schumer ASAP. The heat wave blame for at least three deaths is finally starting to break. Some strong storms could reach into the eastern seaboard today, signaling a change in the weather. This is USA Radio News.
It is a horrible scenario, but it happens. Dennis writes about his wife. She was diagnosed with leukemia. In fact, she's a two-time survivor, and in the midst of all that, they ran up over $1 million in medical bills. Thankfully, they're Medishare members, and Dennis says they are so thankful for that, how others came together to meet their needs, and that's how so many Medishare members feel. This is not health insurance. It's different. You don't have to pay for things you don't believe in, and like Dennis found out, it just works. So if you join Medishare, not only do you save a lot of money, the typical family saves about $500 a month, but you know where your money's going each month. You're helping people, and if the time should come, they'll be helping and even praying for you. So yes, it's different, and as more than 400,000 people now know, when it comes to healthcare costs, different is beautiful. Find out more. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Eight people injured when lightning strikes Florida's Clearwater Beach yesterday afternoon. One of those victims in critical condition after suffering a direct hit, causing him to go into cardiac arrest. Another six of the eight people suffered burns. Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens passed away last week at 99. Today, his body lies in repose at the U.S. Supreme Court in Washington. Justice Elena Kagan saying it was hard to fill his shoes when he left the court. She also says he was a brilliant man with legal gifts and talents,
which he combined with a deep devotion to the rule of law. and a deep commitment to equal justice.
A funeral for Stevens is tomorrow, and then he'll be buried at Arlington National Cemetery. Amid ongoing tensions with Washington, Iran claims to have shut down a spy ring, saying it arrested 17 people who'd been recruited by the CIA. And this is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Credit reporting company Equifax is agreeing to pay as much as $650 million to settle state and federal investigations into an enormous data breach in 2017. It compromised 143 million Americans' personal information, right down to Social Security numbers. Three original NASA videotapes of the Apollo 11 moon landing sold at auction over the weekend for over $1.8 million. The tapes put up for sale at Sotheby's 50 years to the day after the historic first steps on the moon were recorded. The tapes have a runtime of nearly 2.5 hours. They show the entire moonwalk as Mission Control viewed it. The Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, has six new members after the Sunday inductions of Mariano Rivera, Edgar Martinez, Mike Mussina, Lee Smith, the late Roy Halladay, and a soft-spoken man by the name of Harold Baines. More on his induction from USA Radio's Rick Vincent.
He tells the MLB Network,
"Well, you ask me why I never up was been outspoken or said very much. Think of my dad and the lesson he passed on me many years ago. Words can be empty. These speak louder, and sometimes they echo forever."
He played 22 seasons for the White Sox, Rangers, Athletics, Orioles, and Indians. He was a six-time All-Star and twice won the Outstanding Designated Hitter Award.
And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.